evening and welcome. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network at republicbroadcasting.org. Hour two of the broadcast here on this Friday, the 15th of March, 2024. I'm your host, Richard Carey, and this is Beyond the Official Narrative. I have with me Mr. Michael Gaddy and Mr. Paul Edward Stevenson. And yeah, no, let's take it from there, gentlemen. Paul, if you would indulge Mr. Gaddy, you know, I mean, we're from, you know, your European / UK perspective and those around you with like minds and what have you. Where do you think things are headed, you know, in the near future, as Mike described?
Well, I think, you know, in terms of free speech, in terms of government control, and here it's even more acute when we talk about the Uni Party. And this is one of the reasons that George Galloway has been successful, because he quite comically refers to, you know, figuratively, obviously, it refers to the Conservatives and the Labour Party, the two big parties here in the UK, as being two cheeks of the same backside. And so, in other words, there, you know, and this is the problem, you know, we talk about democracy all the time here, all we're home of democracy. And, you know, there is no choice. How is that democratic? And then when you have a democratic vote, in part, for sure, but it's not the only reason, as much as they like those on the centrist right types, shamefully like to you know, blame Galloway for taking advantage of the Israel-Gaza war. I mean, the Gaza war, the Israel-Gaza situation was a big factor, but it wasn't the only factor. It's because Galloway is independent. He's not bought and paid for by the Israeli lobby. Now, we know that AIPAC and the Israeli lobby pretty much owns your government, and in terms certainly of your foreign policy. And it's pretty much here the same as well. All our politicians have got their mouths and their pockets stuffed full of Israeli Zionist and other Jewish groups. And so when this type of legislation comes out, or not legislation, but this kind of, this new, as I say, camel's nose under the tent with clamping down and censoring political groups as, in quotes, extremists, you know, you don't have to wait too long, like I predicted, that it's not going to be Antifa on there. It's not going to be, you know, really probably serious Muslim groups, although there was some Muslim groups mentioned on there. But, you know, you had Patriotic Alternative, the British National Socialist Party. And, of course, this was designed, among other things, to clamp down on intolerance. And guess what? Anti-Semitism. So Israel is the only state in the world that's actually able to commit, arguably, if you listen to the ICJ, a genocide in front of the whole watching world, and at the same time talk about how they're victims and constantly invoking the Holocaust, and manage to produce out of this horror show new aggressive posturing from the British government on how we need to clamp down on anti-Semitism. And in your own country, you know, the First Amendment is very clear, as I understand it. The government cannot get involved with people's speech. It's not ambiguous. There is no qualifiers in this. And this new legislation in South Dakota that this woman that I mentioned wants to bring in, that's exactly what she's doing. And, of course, it's echoing the situation in Florida there as well under DeSantis. So they are, you know, infringing on the First Amendment very aggressively. I think she said, I'm just looking at a quote here, Governor Kristi Noem signed HB 1076, which requires the consideration of the definition of anti-Semitism when investigating unfair or discriminatory practices into law. So there you have it.
Well, thank you for that. I want to hear Mr. Gaddy's feedback to that for start. I do want to announce, though, that I have our third panelist who's joined us. I want to welcome Mr. William Rapillum, another fellow RBN host. And again, Mike, You know, so, just like Paul, someone who's been with me through the our revision media era, hosting with us there. But William, hey, glad you were able to make it tonight.
Yeah, Richard, how you doing? It's good to be with you. Hello, Paul. Hello, Mike.
Hey, William, it's good to speak to you again.
You too.
Yes, and I had been looking forward to getting you and Mr. Gaddy on together, you know, every so often, being how each of you had been doing a national intel report, you know, in the evening prior to the schedule change. And you know, I thought it would be cool to have you two together every so often joining me. So, yeah, thanks for that. And, yeah, I look forward to everyone's rotation feedback to each other here. Firstly, though, Mike, if you'd like to respond your feedback to Paul's comments here. Hello, Mike. I'm not hearing you.
I'm sorry, buddy. I'm sorry. I'm muted myself, you know, but I apologize for that. But the thing that really troubles me about this is why, if I said something that was anti-Semitic and somebody says, oh, that's hate speech, well, what is the difference if someone else calls me a racist? Is that not hate speech too?
So, William.
William? Yeah.
Would you like to take it from there?
Well, yeah, that's what we got to do is use their language, not against them, but just turn it around on them and deflect it back to them. And that's exactly what Mike's referring to there. Yeah, I used to use the term white supremacist to describe Jews because, you know, the pejorative term has been falsely laid on us for the crimes committed by Jews against, you know, people of color like slavery, right?
Right.
So there you go. Yeah.
Well, you know, if you go to, what was the guy's name? You guys help me out here. My age is showing. But what was the Arab or the Muslim, you know, who, it was the Nation of Islam who, who put out the secret relationship between blacks and Jews.
Oh, yes. That was Louis Farrakhan, the Nation of Islam.
Yes. And he didn't write any editorial. He didn't editorialize anything. What he put into these four-volume set, which I've had for several years, what he put into those were official shipping records showing that the Jews were highly involved immensely involved in the slave trade in America, mostly headquartering out of Rhode Island. And of course, normally happens, you know, they had changed their names. They had, some of them even had taken on Hispanic names to kind of cover up, I guess, their nationality. Why do they hide from who they are?
Yeah, I can name one, Aaron Lopez. He was the commandeered. Well, he controlled all of those slave ships, and he had names for them. It was a nice documentary. I've watched it a few times about that and how Jews were wholesale controlled of the slave trade. I think really wholesale. I mean, there's been arguments about the percentage of control they had over it. I believe it was entirely. I mean, it wouldn't have happened without the Jews at all. I mean, you had the Dutch East India Company, which was between, you know, Holland – established, I think, sometime in the 17th century, maybe earlier, but between West Africa, Holland, and then, you know, it started out down in the West Indies, like to islands like Barbados, and you know, I guess you could just name any number of islands down there, and then it migrated up, you know, as the United States began to form before the United States. Started to get ports, and like you said, Rhode Island and Charleston, South Carolina, were two hubs. And you know, they also, you know, brought like the whiskey, all the rum, and these alcohol distilleries. And so, so there's slavery and alcohol. The Jews were really like the CEOs of the companies, you know, and And Louis Farrakhan also put there were flyers that were put up, and there was always a Jewish name on the flyer for the auctions that they would have. Mm-hmm. They were the auctioneers. They were the owners of the ships. They probably commandeered the ships, or they got, you know, paid some goy to commandeer the ships. I don't know, but what else? Louis Farrakhan lays it out beautifully. I mean, it's just damning evidence.
Well, I'm sorry, William, but the thing that always struck me as so odd is, like I said, he didn't editorialize. He just put in all of these official documents and, you know, as you said, the posters about auctions, slave auctions and other stuff. And after he put all of this together, which was their records, they called him an anti-Semite.
Paul, would you like to take it from there?
Well, that's what they do. You know, the more they, you know, abuse they perpetrate and destruction they cause, the more preoccupied they are to the point of obsession with silencing everybody and censoring everybody. But this, you know, in my opinion, has a fairly short shelf life. And even, you know, this is what essentially the government is attempting to do here, over here in this country. And it's remarkably similar in some of the European countries as well. And there's no representation. And so I think this is all at some point going to come to a head. And, like I said, it's this constant. They preface all these kind of clampdowns as well about how we have our values. The British values are on the foundation of democracy and free speech and everything else. And then they proceed to tell you how, you know, where the next hammer blow for real democracy and free speech is coming, you know. So, you know, it is going to reach ahead at some point. And then, I don't know where any of you guys even, you know, listened to Macron's interview he gave yesterday. And in the backdrop of all this, you've still got this whole situation with Ukraine and Russia. Essentially, you know, the West and Russia. I don't know, but it was very interesting because that little clown Macron, who's, you know, that performance he did last night, he did an interview with France 2 and TF1 TV news channels last night, Thursday. And I mean, this guy, I talk about word salad. I mean, yeah. He is one of the most cringeworthy, smug little fools that there's ever been. And, you know, he's trying to act the tough guy over here, but he's a total bluffer. And last night, apart from his as I say, he likes to sort of present himself in, I guess, if he could pull it off, if he was clever enough, you know, to indulge in linguistic leisure domain. But that's just too complimentary for what he's actually doing. It's just contradictory nonsense and BS about how Russia cannot be allowed to win, but yet, and we're not ruling anything out about sending troops there, but yet we haven't done that yet. So he's contradicting himself all the time, and it's embarrassing and it's pathetic. And like I said, it's just these inane attempts to sort of sound like he's some kind of astute leader. But another thing, what he said in the interview was, because Donald Trump was brought up, as he often is when it comes to this issue, that if he becomes president, that he will end this war in 24 hours, of course. Of course, Donald would probably, I think that's like 23 hours too long for a man of Trump's talent. but he says, this is a quote. Now, bear in mind, you know, what he said here, Macron, as far as I'm informed, he said, and I quote, "I don't think Donald Trump will become president of the United States." What the hell is that supposed to mean? So here you have a guy, again, pontificating about the democratic values. And this guy, from what I can tell, seems to be saying he's got some inside information from somebody. I don't know whether this guy's a prophet or a fortune teller, but he seems to know, if this information is true, that Donald Trump will not become president of the United States. I mean, talk about saying the quiet part out loud. And I'll just finish off by saying this. Even, you know, Macron talks a lot of nonsense. You know, like I said, but he should not be allowed to get away with a statement like that. Where is the press demanding accountability and to press the man on, you know, how do you know that? And, you know, what were you told? And, you know, who told you? You know, but nothing. He's allowed to say something like that, and there's no real follow-up on it, you know? It's quite sinister, I think, because the first thing I come to mind is, okay, well, do you know something we don't? Obviously, you're implying you do. What are you planning to do with Donald Trump or your source?
Well, Paul, I'm curious to hear Mr. Gaddy's feedback to those comments specifically, especially considering he was at one of these government agencies for 2 decades. Mike?
Well, here's the thing, guys.
Whoa, we just lost you. I think you muted, Mike.
Oh, okay. How's that?
There you are. Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, well, I'm having some storm problems here, guys. I apologize. But you're spot on, Paul. You're absolutely spot on. Some of these things make no sense whatsoever. But here's the thing that I learned while being, as I refer to on several occasions, of being in the belly of this beast. The one thing I will tell you is that no one becomes president in this country without the approval of the Jewish bankers. So you can think that you can put someone in there, but you can't. It's all an illusion. It's like a soap opera that they play for you over and over and over again. I mean, look, like I brought up the 2000 election where everybody should have been in the streets screaming about the Supreme Court interfering with an election. But the Republicans didn't, you know, because they won. So then we get to 2020, and in an obviously totally corrupt operation, the what was it, guys? Someone help me out here. 10, 11, 12 states took the election to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court refused to hear it. Why did they hear a case in 2000 and refuse to hear a very similar case in 2020? And that's because they're all in on it. It's all a huge theatrical soap opera to keep the American public emotionally involved in the election. Because if the American people said, you know, Butler Schaefer, God rest his soul, said one time, what would happen if they gave an election and nobody came? How would the government ever explain that? But what they do is they keep everybody emotionally, you know, I stop and think about the 4 years that Trump was in office. Guys, was there a day that went by that he wasn't attacked by CNN or somebody?
William, you want to take it?
Please, William.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's the interesting dichotomy, right? So on the one hand, I agree with you 100%. You know, nobody's going to get in there without Jewish approval, and now you have the controlled opposition. You have to have this theatrics of CNN attacking him, right?
Right.
Which it's really hard for people to extricate their minds from this controlled opposition dialectic. It's even hard for me, even still, sometimes. You know, I don't watch those news channels anymore, but the temptation to go vote anyway is always there. So you guys have done some interesting exposés on what it actually means, or I've heard some, I don't remember if it was you guys or not, but listening to your roundtables here in the recent past, talking about how voting, you're actually giving your approval to the system.
You are.
So I don't know if that's just actual legal precedent, like it puts you in a position to where now you are a subject. If you don't vote, what actually happens? I mean, some people think, well, I might as well vote. I've got nothing to lose from doing it. So they just do it anyway. They vote for the lesser of the two evils. well, it's perceptively, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know, maybe that, there's more questions come up for me.
Well, I couldn't agree more with that, William, and we look at it from so many different directions, you know, about the election. And I know it's an ingrained thing. Oh, if you don't vote, you're un-American. If you don't do this, if you don't do that. But it is an addiction. I mean, voting is probably a stronger addiction in this country than is heroin or coke or, you know, what have you, marijuana. It's probably a stronger addiction than any of those. And it people think, but the thing I remember distinctly, 2005 in Iraq, and the U.S. government comes out and says, okay, we're having this election in Iraq. Okay, if at least 50% of the people don't show up to vote, it's an invalid election because it's a no-confidence vote. So if they said that about another country, what if 55% of the registered voters in America didn't vote? Would they claim it was an invalid election? Goodness, no.
Paul, would you like to take it from there?
Yeah, well, like I said, you know, for Macro, you know, to publicly, for a state leader to make a comment like that. And again, as far as I am informed, I don't think Donald Trump will become president of the United States. And no one pressed him on it. And I still haven't seen it anywhere today. Now, we all know, you know, how things work, and that it's an illusion and it's a facade and everything you've just said. But why is it that he's able to make a comment like that and for no one to raise eyebrows in the press and ask him, well, you know, how could you possibly know that? And you know, who is your source here? Can you elaborate? He's just allowed to say something like that. And again, it's all done while these people spew their love and of, you know, democratic values that we all have here. And then, of course, we mock someone like Vladimir Putin and the Russian Federation, who are currently in the process of having an election. They dismiss that and they scoff at that. But, you know, it's here we just pretend that we are democratic. You know, if you've got half a brain cell, you know it's a facade. You know it's an illusion. Perhaps, you know, Russia is in actuality maybe more, you know, democratic than we are here. I don't know for sure. But at least they don't pretend there so much about having a strong leader who controls everything. We have all these little despots who are puppets of Jewish interests. And then we pretend that, you know, we have these great democracies where we all get a chance to vote them.
Well, very well said, Paul. And if I may, one of the things I think about so many times, every time somebody says democracy, we're going to spread democracy around the world at the point of a gun. You know, all of this stuff that we claim that we're doing. But, you know, we in America, so many times you will see that, oh, this wonderful phrase called the founders. Oh, the founders were great. They did this, they did that. Well, folks, let's look at what the founders actually said about a democracy. John Adams said there never was a democracy that didn't commit suicide. Thomas Jefferson said a democracy is nothing but mob rule. And then, of course, Benjamin Franklin said a democracy is two wolves and a chicken deciding what's for dinner. Now, one of the things I will always remember, guys, years ago, I decided I would substitute teach 1 year just for a chance to maybe get inside a school system and actually try to teach some truth. But I'll never forget, I had a classroom, you know, a history classroom, and I asked the kids in the classroom, you know, they were high school juniors and seniors, and I asked them, I said, are you folks all for a democracy? Is it the best form of government? And they said, yes, that's what we got to have. We got to have a democracy. Well, I had made a mental count in my head, and I had 15 males and I had 12 females in the class. So I said, okay, let's have a democracy here. What if we had a vote and all of the boys, which is 15, and they outvoted all of the girls, and they said that all you girls had to come to class naked every day? That's a democracy.
Wow, let me toss that over to William.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, what a great point that is. So,
not that we all wouldn't have wanted to be at that school as young boys. Come on. Anyhow, go ahead.
It sounds like maybe some folks would really like that democracy. So, what, Mike? I want to know, what do you think? You know, because we talk about this, but what is our alternative form of government? That would be, do we just need to make slight tweaks to the Constitution so that there's no loopholes in it, that the government can do whatever it wants? Does the Constitution have a lot of good redeeming points to it? Or do we need to just go back to maybe, like, I don't know, monarchy, where you have a king that represents the people, the race of people, kind of? Everybody's been mixed up so much now, like racially balkanized all over these countries, so it's kind of hard to put that back together, possibly. But what do you think would be the most ideal form of government?
Well, I am not. I'm an anarchist. I don't think there's anything government does that is good. You know, they have these pretenses. Oh, we do this, we do that, we take care of these, we take care of the others. But, you know, that to me is not what government should do. And if we had to have a government, I would say that we could tweak the Articles of Confederation. We could take the Supremacy Clause out of the Constitution, which wasn't in the Articles of Confederation. We could take the Necessary and Proper Clause out, which wasn't in there. We could take the complete federal judiciary out. And why do we need a federal judiciary? This is the thing I have asked people for years. Why should we as a people have to pay taxes to pay state judges to make a decision which can be overruled by federal judges? Why should we have to pay both of them? Why do you have to have a duplicate system with that? It makes no sense to me. We're paying twice for the same job. You know, and as Luther Martin said at the Constitutional Convention, he said, the Supreme Court should only be able, you know, to take a case where two states disagree. And then Luther Martin also said at the convention that the Supreme Court should have a jury of the people. You know, now George Mason made a very interesting comment, which I liked, at the convention. He said, okay, if the Supreme Court makes a decision, then it will be submitted to the states and will require a three-quarters approval by the states to become a valid decision. Now, that puts the control back in the hands of the people again. They don't want to do that. All governments want the people to have, it's an illusion. You have no power whatsoever. The only power that people think they have is the vote, and that is a great illusion.
Well, I'd like to hear on the other side of the break Paul's feedback to that. And also, we have a caller, evidently, who has something on topic. Please, I hope, look forward to that as well. Stick around, folks.
Truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Do you begin to smell some funky little things going on? Let me share this story with you. It's not so much a story, it's something I wrote years ago. Read your history, people. Stock markets collapse on Friday. Bank seizures, closures, holidays take place after business hours on Friday. Do currencies or governments also collapse on Friday? Tomorrow's Friday. Will the end come on this Friday, or will the inevitable collapse hold off for a while? The next round of the worst financial crisis in 100 years is coming, people, and the government is out to make you and I pay for it. Will your savings survive a global banking wipeout? What happens when the U.S. sees hyperinflation? What if taxes soar not only for the rich? Can you survive if the stock market tanks? Look, between a stock market wipeout, waves of bank failures, soaring government spending that will lead to hyperinflation, and the destruction of the dollar's value, isn't it time that you prepare for the uncertainty which lies ahead? Protect your money now or forever kiss it goodbye. My friends, I offer you over 6 decades' experience of hard asset ownership and knowledge, and I'm prepared to handle the smallest detail in the balanced protection of your portfolio. For as the future of uncertainty continues to blanket this nation of ours, I believe that I can offer you the privacy, safety, security, and possibly some profitability which you deserve. And so I invite you to visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com for further information regarding protecting your wealth. Or call me, Jeffrey Bennett, at 602-799-8214. Or by email at KettleMoraineLTD@Cox.net for private consultation. Once again, our phone number, 602-799-8214. It's almost Friday.
Hi, Tom Bolton for EaseOff. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation. But today I want to spotlight 4 of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Are back, folks, beyond the official narrative here on Republic Broadcasting. And folks, I do have to remind you to please help out. RBN still is in serious need of your financial support. We no reserves at the moment. It's been pretty bad in recent weeks here. And please, everyone, do what you can. If you have a pen, no matter how you listen here, take down. However, you want to help out, you know, send that. You could use PayPal on the RBN website donate page, republicbroadcasting.org. Donate. You can call our RBN staff to donate via credit or debit card. Call in to donate at 800-724-2719, extension 3. Or you can mail that donation. Cash, check, or money order payable to the letters RBN. Send that to Republic Broadcasting Network, 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. And we greatly appreciate it, folks. Again, this is Richard Carey with our roundtable panel, Paul Edward Stevenson, William Rapillum, and Michael Gaddy. And Paul, I'd like to hear your feedback after Mr. Gaddy's last remarks.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a very big question. But I wanted just to say, you know, back to the point of where is it going? I mean, I do think it's going to get worse before it gets better. And then, you know, out of the ashes of that, including an economic collapse that at some point I believe is inevitable. You have this situation in the background with Russia and Ukraine where the belligerence continues. On one hand, they're saying, you know, we're not going to negotiate with Putin. I mean, Macron said that last night. And as much as I dismiss Macron as a little fool and a little bluffer, there is this continued narrative of we mustn't let Russia win, but we're not going to send in NATO troops. So what are you going to do then? When are they ever, as Pope Francis suggested, as the Ukrainians' options, you know, rapidly diminish and dwindle in front of our eyes, when are they going to raise the white flag? And if they're not going to raise the white flag, what are they going to do? So I still think there is a danger that this thing in Russia with and the West can escalate, because they've vastly underestimated Putin, both economically and his popularity at home. They're not getting rid of the guy. You know, Macron is talking about, oh, I'll negotiate and I'm all for negotiations, but not with Putin. Well, Putin's just, in all likelihood, is almost an inevitability about to be voted as the Russian president for another 6 years. So if they're not going to send in troops and they're not going to acknowledge Russia wins, what are they going to do? And I, you know, these people are so belligerent, you know, that it does still worry me that this whole situation could get out of hand, because I know, like when we've spoken about them today, who really pulls the strings in the West, and they were the same people that pulled the strings in World War One, World War Two, and created the narrative. In fact, there's massive parallels between the narrative today in 1930s Germany and how World War Two started, and what's happening with Vladimir Putin right now, you know, in the Donbass, for example, when he's in there helping those people who identify as Russians in the Donbass region. So I still think this thing could get out of hand. Obviously, I hope it doesn't, but I just don't know for sure how this is going to play out. It's like there just never seems to be any give or any ability to say, okay, as you know, as the Germans would say, genug ist genug, you know, enough is enough.
Well, here, let's complete another round of the panel to William, then Mr. Gaddy, then we could go to the first caller. William.
Yeah, I was looking for this article I saw recently about Russia cracking down on something. I think it was free speech. I don't remember what the exact topic was. So I forgot. I don't know if you guys remember that. It was probably a week or two ago. Which, you know, I swing back and forth with Russia, you know, is it all part of the plan? You know, did they really miscalculate Russia? I mean, we have psychopaths, you know, just absolute hell-bent on starting wars everywhere. Is the whole world really on board with this? Or is the, you know, I mean, when I talk about the whole world, I'm talking about all the governments that are controlled by these chicken-swinging psychopaths. Or, you know, are there things that don't go as planned? You know, did they really think they were going to win a war in Ukraine against Russia? You know, the Jews, because this is the global homo Jewish, I guess, left part of the dialectic against Russia. I'm not sure if the Zio part of it is on board with it, or if there's any really difference. Go ahead.
Well, I think they thought they could get rid of Putin. That's been the goal all along. And they still sort of talk about that, and this is why it's so crazy, because that is not going to happen. And they talk about these kind of anti-Putin factions in Russia, and they allude to these kind of factions that they can make a deal with, and you know. But these people are largely non-existent. He's talking about sort of, you know, some sybaritic Moscowites who like to go shopping, and you know, for Gucci bags in downtown Milan, and who like to, you know, have fine wine and dining in the Parisian salubrious areas of Paris, etc. But they don't have any power, these people in Russia. And so this obsession with regime change, they thought they could do it with the sanctions, and they think that these people are sick and tired of it, and if we just get rid of Putin, we can go back to normal. Well, it's like, I think they have miscalculated because of their hubris. And what's going to happen when, you know, if they even right now, if they won't admit, even though on one side they admit they haven't got even the shells or the personnel to really continue this fight for a lot longer, well, what are they going to do? They're going to have to admit to defeat, and they keep backing themselves into a corner to say they won't negotiate with Putin. Well, if you're not going to negotiate with Putin, what other options are there? You know.
Well, Mike, what insights might you have on the international geopolitical comments William and Paul made?
Well, it's very interesting, and you know, the thing that keeps popping in my mind is, to go back to Willem's question on the about constitutions and governments. Here's a question I would ask all of you gentlemen. The four of us decided to go into business together, and so we drew up a contract, and I put in the contract that at any time I wanted to, I could take any amount of the money you owned for any reason I wanted to, and you had no recourse. Would you be a party to that contract?
I certainly wouldn't.
Well, you are. It's the U.S. government. You sign a contract with them every time you vote. And that contract says they can take any amount, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1 of the Constitution. They can take any amount of money they want at any time they want for any reason they want. And all they have to do is say because it's necessary or it promotes the general welfare, and you have no position. The other thing I think that is people have forgotten is regardless, if it was the four of us and we're talking with each other, it's really simple. If we're dealing together, we have two ways of dealing. One is by reason. We sit down and we reason things out. The other is force. And as long as these countries have these huge military machines, reason is not in their bailiwick because they don't care.
And that's
go ahead,
why
Richard.
And Mike, that's why a lot of people shoot holes in the potential of, declaring yourself a national. To not be declaring yourself a United States citizen, which you somewhat are doing in so many ways. They don't even need any legal pretense. But I mean, with getting a social security number, with filing taxes for those who do, for, like you say, voting. And I mean, some would suggest, especially in the eyes of the Federal Reserve, the private central banks, even getting a birth certificate. Mike.
Well, there's a lot of things we have to look at here, guys, about this. And it's really troubling because, we were told and taught from, the time we were old enough to stand up in class and pledge allegiance and all this other stuff. In America, we were mind-numbed. We were mind-controlled. How wonderful this government is, how wonderful, George Washington, all these people, we're taught how they were, inspired by God. And it's all a huge psychological operation. There is nothing about the government that we have in America, and I don't think about most other people in other countries. And, and just to interject, and then I would like to get Paul and William's comments and yours too, Richard. And that is, if people are aware of the military capabilities of Russia, Russia could take Israel out in about 20 minutes. So if there's a war going on, why don't they? Because the longer you stretch out the wars, the more money you make. That's why America has been at war since 2001, continuously. Because two things happen to the people when you're at war. They forget everything about, we're at war. We got to do this. We got to do that. And it's a tragedy that we agree to let the government do something because we're at war. But we're at war, but who attacked us?
Paul, you want to go first?
Well, no one's attacked the United States. That's the irony, of course, in all of this, I don't know what exactly the Russian military capability is, but it's pretty extensive. Putin has warned that if there's any NATO troops sent into that arena, he reminded people only as recently as about 5 days ago that he has the capability to strike, you know, on home soil. This is why it worries me, because Vladimir Putin is not a bluffer. If Vladimir Putin says something, he'll do it. And they don't want to be backing him into a corner and leaving him in no position. And it's the belligerence of the Western leaders that worries me, where that this could escalate, you know? I mean, I don't see, you know, the other thing, of course, you've got Israel out there, but Israel's not a threat to Russia insofar as Israel wants to just expand the Zionist plan in the whole Middle East region and just kill everybody, I guess. And it's certainly doing that in Gaza. It's ethnic cleansing that region. But Israel also has nuclear weapons, you know. So there's a lot of psychopaths on the Western side, and you've got a guy in Vladimir Putin who's not messing around. He's not the kind of guy you want to back into a corner, you know. He's not going to, like, surrender.
William.
Yeah, and he's also very slow and deliberate, too. You know, they've even accused him of not doing enough. And the jury's out on to whether or not that's because he understands what he's up against. Maybe he learned from mistakes. You could call them mistakes, I guess, of Adolf Hitler, who was fighting unfairly a three-front war in World War II. I think Vladimir Putin learns from history, and then he definitely puts things in context. We saw that in his interview that he did with Tucker Carlson. We didn't like everything he said, but at the same time, he was not stepping outside of his lane or invoking anything beyond the pale that would get him, I don't know what you would call it, but he kept his nose clean for the most part and stayed on the side of you know, defending the Jewish establishment, while also putting his country kind of first. But he also, you know, he also purported the lies of history, about Russia, you know, and really, you know, was very nationalist Russia, and, you know, and didn't mention anything about the horrors committed by the Bolsheviks.
It was very frustrating listening to him. It was like you've given us about 1,200 years of history, and then you just skipped over the Bolsheviks.
He had an opportunity there to, bring that to light, and he didn't do it.
Yeah, well,
I don't know. Would you guys think it would have been bad timing? Or
I don't know. That might be too much to ask of any leader of a nation. I've mentioned that. Well, here, gentlemen, I said that I would try to take at least this caller who had been on for so long, JR in Georgia. Hey, JR, hey, thanks for holding. What did you want to add, or did you have something to address one of our panelists, one or more?
Well, I really don't have much to add. You had such a hot number of topics discussed this evening. The only thing I will add to this conversation is, Satan was cast down to this earth. We are living in an era where Satan has control. That's why we see the disgust and this absolute mayhem that we're seeing as we live this day, this night, this year. To address another issue, there is no government perfect in this world since Satan was cast down. And I don't mean to rebut Mike Gatti. I served for this country as a veteran. I don't stand up anymore for the national anthem because I am hurt, not angry. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying here. I am hurt where this country has gone. This is the greatest country the world has ever seen. whether you like it or not. Filled with all its sin and retribute, we are still the greatest nation in this world. And there's very few of us left in this world who are trying to fight for that. We are tired, and we are angry, and we're saddened. And things get better. You know what, guys? I'll agree with you. Probably not. Probably not going to get better. When you got them kids over in, let's say, London for the past 3 years, what's the most famous name being born for male, baby, infants? Muhammad. You tell me, brothers, where's this world going? You look at this country right now, and I'm going to speak of something specifically within the past recent week. Look at the country of Haiti. What has the governor of Florida done? What's he attempting to do? He's trying to put up a little bit of a fight. Just a little bit of fight to save the sovereignty of this country. Because, brothers, in 30 years, this country on the lower 48 ain't going to exist. You know it as well as I do. Well, we can bitch, cry, complain, and cry in anger, and wailing and gnashing of teeth. There's too many Americans that are absolutely DAs. And we're going to suffer the price for that. My kids, my grandkids are going to suffer that price. If you disagree with me, that's fine. I don't care. This country was once a shining city on a hill. With all its sin and all its abuses, we were perfect almost. As God demanded it from us. And it was us, not the daggum Jews. It was the white Anglo-Saxon European dude who gave in to his greed. Is why we're at right now. It's simple as that.
To allow such bribery and infiltration, I suppose that there is truth to that that one could not disagree with. And I'm sure you're interested, JR, to hear Mr. Michael Gaddy's feedback to that. So, Mike, if you would, please, sir. Mike, I'm sorry. You're. I'm not hearing you, sir.
Okay. Well, JR, I am also a veteran, and I took the same oath you did, and I didn't adhere to my oath. And I would venture that you didn't either, because in that oath it said we would uphold and defend this country against all enemies, foreign and domestic. When has this military in this country ever defended this country against the domestic enemies? The people who are in government who are violating the law every day, when has the military ever defended the people of this country against those domestic enemies?
They've never done that, Mike.
And they're not going to. And see, therefore, the people who go into the military, and I had to, you know, I told the preacher one time, he said, well, they just asked for all the veterans to stand up and you didn't stand up. And I said, yeah, I didn't. And a good friend of mine, preacher in Colorado, he said, well, why didn't you stand up? And I said, because I don't need to be acknowledged for things I had to ask God for forgiveness for, because I took that oath and I didn't even know the oath I was taking. I was a 17-year-old kid at the time, and I took that oath. But the domestic enemies to this country have destroyed us, and the military has assisted the domestic enemies of this country. They haven't opposed them.
And, sir, you're exactly correct. And that's why I sit in a hoodie and a t-shirt that says a veteran, and I sit. All I do is take off my hat. I don't stand anymore because I am hurt. I am saddened by the once belief I had in this country when I was 19. This country has been destroyed, and I don't know if we can ever get it back again.
And it's been destroyed by the domestic enemies. It hasn't been destroyed outside of this country. It's been destroyed by the people inside the country who claim to rule over us. Because when has this Constitution ever stopped a tyrant? Did it stop FDR from creating false pretenses to start World War II? Did it stop him? Did the Constitution stop Abraham Lincoln from violating the Constitution more than any president in American history? The Constitution will never stop a tyrant because the tyrants control the Constitution. And they are the domestic enemies to the American people, and all we do is sit on our butts and talk about it.
Yes, I do. I wish to relate to you gentlemen this evening, and I'm thankful for your conversation. I'm not trying to
Thank you, J.R.
An aggressor.
No, I understand, and I thank you for your comments, J.R., but, you know, when people start talking about, you know, the veterans, I believe if there's anybody in the country that's let their fellow neighbors down, it's been the military. Because we we didn't do the job that we were told to do. And when I saw the military going into New Orleans and seizing firearms after Katrina, I knew we were done. Because they will follow orders. And the problem is they will follow orders if the order is a violation of the Constitution. They'll do it anyway. Because in my lifetime, we've never had a declared war. How many of us veterans have gone off and fought wars that weren't declared?
World War II, last one, declared.
Yep.
Anything
you
else
got it.
Been a police officer. Thank you for your time, guys.
Thank you.
And, gentlemen, I'm going to have the three of you back in the same grouping again Friday soon. So it was a pleasure. Mike Gaddy, Paul Edward Stevenson, William Rapillum. Have a great night, gentlemen.
Thank all of you. It's been my pleasure, and it was a pleasure to talk with you, Paul. Good to talk with you again, William, and always a pleasure, Richard. God bless. Everyone support RBN. We need the help.
Ditto.
Thank you, William. And thank you, Paul.
Yeah, thank you, guys. God bless.
All right, folks, please support the station to keep this kind of free speech alive, and that we will speak again soon. Transcend the construct. Regards.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.